God forgave Israel at their darkest moment, but it didn't let them off the hook for their actions. We must find balance here. Just because we forgive, everything is not suddenly fine, just fine. Neither is it right to continue to hold someone's offense over their head. Oh, yeah. Easier said than done. Many times I hear someone say they are upset or angry when others do something wrong according to them, saying the wrong thing or acting in a way we are sure is inappropriate. I'm sure it's easy for all of us to become critical, aiming our ever-ready judgmental fingers, which, by law, may be technically correct, yet many times arriving at the wrong conclusions. We should ask ourselves concerning those who offend us. Who can guess the intent of another's actions? Can you actually guess what was really going on in that person's heart? Let's see the big picture. Take a moment before we judge. Step back and carefully consider before we react. God asked us to use common sense, dividing right from wrong, not condemn any who don't fit our model of rightness. Did we actually investigate to gather data, or did we merely read the news, which is often no less than passing rumors and filling in the blanks according to their agenda? What does God say about the offense of our neighbor? And what does God say about our reaction? We can't preach love and grace out of one side of our mouth, then spit fire and condemnation out of the other. I think that's called speaking out of both sides of your mouth. Often, our hasty reactions are wrong reactions. Often we live out the statement, "Mercy for me and justice for you," holding others hostage by our lack of forgiveness, reminding them of their actions and withholding affection. But yet we, ourselves, expect full forgiveness and even acquittal. Many times, even though the other person admits their guilt and asks forgiveness, we may smile and say, "Oh yes, I forgive you." But in our hearts, there still lives woundedness and a grudge. There is not one person who hasn't done themselves and others wrong in some fashion or another. All have fallen short of the glory of God, from birth to the last breath. If we hold others hostage for their wrongdoing, we deny them relational trust which God has so liberally extended to us as seen in His commitment to our welfare. Also, we really need to forgive, not for the other person, but for ourselves. As long as we don't forgive, we stay chained to that other person in our circumstance of offense. When we ardently remember the wrong of our neighbor, we deny them re-entry into right relationship with us. If all our wrongdoings were suddenly the topic of tomorrow's newspaper, there may not be enough pages in the daily news. So who are we to exploit our neighbor? Do we need to be validated so bad? We allow ourselves to be compelled to put our foot on our neighbor's neck in order to feel important? Isn't it enough? God has spoken to us. What will it cost us to allow people room and time to rethink their actions or words? Now, listen up. That may take a while, so we'll also have to practice some patience and grace while they come to a better conclusion. If we are the Christians we say we are, pray for your neighbor instead of accuse your neighbor. Many people aren't going to apologize like we want them to. Many people truly don't know the words. They've never crafted a good apology. not necessarily because they are mean or resentful, but because they don't have words yet and may not even be aware of their actions. Sure, they may have an idea, but it is truly unusual to find someone who actually knows the value of saying, or even how to say, "I was wrong, and here's why." Lend the world your ear, not your critical, aiming finger. After all, most of the time, they are acting like us. Let us be swept away with the goodness of God rather than the badness of our neighbor. What if we actually gave people time to come to us while we refused to carry the hurt or offense of the situation? We may have to actually engage them and to be willing for the conversation before they address the issues themselves. It is possible, you know, that the other person may not be aware of an offense they have caused. Peter asked Jesus,
"How often can my brother do me wrong and I must forgive him? 7 times?
And Jesus told him,
"What? 7? Hardly. Try 70 times 7.
Matthew 18:21. Real forgiveness does not keep track of offenses. The rabbis taught that people should forgive those who offend them, but only 3 times. Peter, trying to be especially generous, asked Jesus if 7, the perfect number, was enough times to forgive someone. But Jesus answered, 70 times 7, meaning that we shouldn't even keep track of how many times we forgive someone. We should forgive others, no matter how many times they ask. Of course, that doesn't mean we don't practice good boundaries, but it does mean we absolutely may not leverage fellowship and affection against their admission of wrongdoing, like,
"I'll love you if you'll repent, but otherwise I'll treat you like the scum you are."
Gosh, that's ugly, isn't it? That's not right. Everyone needs hope, especially today. A flicker is an inconsistent, fluctuating light. A glimmer is to shine faintly, but is more consistent than a flicker. God's light in us is more than a flicker or a glimmer. It's a glow. Learn to see that flicker or glimmer in others, but don't let offense create a blind spot in your own eyes when the opportunity is in front of you for a godly response. People are condemned enough in their own mirror and don't need our judgment and finger-pointing. They need encouragement and hope. We've got it, so let's give it.